Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark.
Houses of Darkness, Volume 2, Story Number 1. It was December 2003, when my four kids had a scare at their school bus stop. We lived in a mobile home at the bottom of a hill. My kids had to walk up the hill, driveway to catch the bus. Right in front of our mobile home, there was a new house that we were building. Since then, we have moved in and the mobile home was moved out. The kids went out the door at 6:50 a.m., as usual. I always stood at the door and listened to the kids talking up the driveway, since I couldn't see them anymore because of the new house being in the way. I would stand there until I would hear the bus stop, come and pick them up. Now, on this particular day, I didn't. Our new little one, Hannah, wanted to eat, and you do not keep a five-month-old waiting. Right at the moment I was supposed to listen for the kids in the bus, Hannah was screaming to be fed, so instead I sat down to feed her. As I was feeding her, I was watching the local news on TV. I was still trying to listen for the bus to come at the same time. As I was sitting there, I heard a faint beep, beep, beep sound. I was wondering what was wrong with the TV. I listened a little more. The beeping was getting a little louder and closer and faster. I was thinking, oh great, our TV is shot. What is that beeping sound? Just then, I could hear the bus stop at the top of the hill, pick the kids up. The beeping was gone. I didn't think another thing about it. That is until the kids came home from school. That afternoon, when the kids came in through the door from getting off the bus, the first thing Jonathan said to me was, "Do I have to go to school tomorrow?" I said, "Of course," unless he was sick. He then asked me, "Does he have to ride the bus?" I said, "Of course." And then he told me he didn't want to catch the bus anymore in the mornings. I was thinking, "What?" Then the girls told me what happened, since Jonathan was truly acting terrified. Here goes. The kids went out the door as usual, except Mom was not standing in the doorway to listen. They walked up the sidewalk and were met by our flock of ducks. The ducks were quacking loudly, as they do every morning when they see the kids leave for school. In the field next to the driveway was Sam, our dog, sniffing around. Following the kids up the hill to the road was Puff, our old family mutt. The kids got to the top of the driveway and saw parked across the road their great uncle's car. He had arrived earlier that morning to go hunting way back on the farm. The kids were waiting when they heard that faint beep 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 sound. It was very foggy that morning, so the kids couldn't see anything in the sky where the beeping was coming from. The second the beeping started, the ducks started quacking instantly. Sam started barking wildly in the field. Puff took off across the road to the uncle's car, circling it, pawing at it, trying to get in. Puff absolutely hates cars. You cannot get her near one when it's time for a vet visit. For Puff to try to get in it was not normal. As the kids were standing there, hearing the slow beeping sound, think of the beep you would hear if you had a metal detector and were looking for metal. The beeping was getting louder and closer. As it did, it was getting faster. All the kids said they wanted to run back down the hill. Jonathan was crying, begging Sarah to go with him, but they all said it was as if they were glued to the ground. They couldn't move. It was as if something was holding them there. The fast beep, beep, beep was right overhead. It was as if it had detected them like a metal detector would do. At that very moment, a car came around the corner, followed by the bus. The kids said the beeping stopped immediately. The kids then got on the bus. I saw their bus driver a day later at the grocery store. I asked him if he saw anything unusual the previous morning when picking the kids up. He said no, except for seeing the dog running around and around the uncle's car like mad, trying to paw her way in. For the next 5 months, my kids wouldn't go and wait at that top of the hill for the bus. They stayed down at the bottom on the sidewalk and would make a mad dash up the hill when they heard the bus coming. Something was definitely there. I heard it too, but didn't realize it was outside. And after my kids. Story number two. Between the summer of 2001 and 2002, we would hear Bigfoot occasionally howl on the hillside here at our Cabell County home. There was even one encounter of him coming down to our mobile home and slapping the side of it. Bigfoot hit the trailer so hard it shook from end to end. Our family and friends had heard repeatedly about our Bigfoot have Rachel and Jonathan's birthday party with the theme Bigfoot. We had a bonfire, hot dog roast with a night walk in the woods after dark. There were about 18 people that took that walk in the woods, including several small children and grandparents. We were going to walk up the gas, well-lit road to the end and come back. The walk was approximately 1 mile total. As we were walking along in the pitch dark with only a couple of flashlights, we couldn't hear anything in the woods, all the way up to the gas well. With everyone talking nonstop the whole time, I'm afraid if there were any animals about, they would be long gone when our big group of loudmouths came through. On our way back out of the holler, Kevin and I decided to wait and let everyone get far ahead of us so we could walk out in silence. On the right of us was a very steep hillside. At the top was the very place I had seen Bigfoot a year before when Puff chased him. On the left side of the dirt road was a steep drop-off, and about 50 feet below that, the road, and then the stream. Kevin and I began walking very slowly out of the gas well holler alone. The rest of the party had gone on ahead of us. We each had a small flashlight. After going about 30 feet down the road, we heard footsteps on the hillside to our right, following along. We would take several steps and stop, and it would take steps and stop right after us. It would take two or three steps, more than we did, so we heard those extra steps after we had stopped moving. Along the way out, we would stop and listen to see if it was doing exactly what we did. We had to pass through a gate about halfway out of the holler. On each side of the gate was barbed wire that ran up the hill to the top and down the hill towards the stream. When we passed through the gate, whatever it was making those footsteps didn't cross over the barbed wire. From then on out, we didn't hear it walking along anymore. Next story. I live in Randolph County, and a few years ago, two friends of mine were going down Eisner Creek Road near Elkins late at night when they saw someone, presumably male, standing beside the road wearing a dark-colored hooded sweatshirt. He was holding a dog's leash, but they both said the dog was strange-looking, somewhat there, but not there all at the same time. My friend, who was a passenger, also said even though there was light from the moon, she couldn't make out the person's face, even though he was looking toward the road. On their way back, about 3 hours later, the same figure was standing in the same spot, holding the same dog's leash. This time he was closer to the woods than the road, and the dog was so filmy and see-through that you could barely see him against the darkness of the woods. They were both terrified and, of course, didn't stop. But everyone thought it was extremely strange that the same person would still be in the same spot walking their dog 3 hours later, especially when there were no houses nearby. I ran into the same friend the other day, and she told me she was telling the story to one of her co-workers and that he had seen the same figure on a few occasions. He also told her that this is a well-known ghost and that no matter how hard you look, you can never make out his face under the hooded sweatshirt, even though he is always facing the road. I have since heard others claim to have also seen this dog-walking, faceless ghost along the road. Next story. When I got married, my wife and I purchased a trailer. We put it next door to my parents' house. The master bedroom was at the rear of the trailer. When our son was born, he slept in the room with us to make it easier for early morning feedings, changes, and such. When we would put him to bed in the evening, something was always waking him up about every hour or so. We couldn't figure out what it would be. We even asked his doctor, who said he didn't think it was anything to worry about. One evening, my wife discovered quite by accident what it was. It was about 8 o'clock in the evening. She put him to bed, then stepped out into the hallway and just stood there. She then heard a loud scratching at the window. She ran and looked out, but there was nothing there. She called out for me. We got him back to sleep and hid in the closet. Again, there was a scratching sound. We both jumped and looked out, but nothing was there. I went outside. but couldn't find anything to even point to anyone being at that window. Then they got even braver. They started beating on the back door, sometimes so hard you could see knuckle prints in the aluminum. This even happened when we had company, but we could never catch anybody when it happened. My mother began to watch our door out of her kitchen window as soon as the beating began one evening. I called her. There was no one at the door, but the beating continued. This was a new trailer, had never been lived in by anyone but us. Perhaps we placed a trailer where someone years before had been buried, or perhaps it was the ghost from next door reminding us that she was still around. We will never know. We move not too long after that. Next story. We lived in a small house on Beachfort. We used to always sit out in the yard during the summer, especially in the evenings. We were sitting in the yard one evening when we began to hear what sounded like a woman screaming. No one could see anything. My dad said, "We should go inside. It could be a panther." The next evening, we again were sitting in the yard, and again we heard the screaming sound. This went on for several days, all along me thinking that a big cat was going to come and get me. The screaming began to continue way into the night, some nights all night long. My dad said, "That's unusual for a panther." It started to sound like it was getting closer and closer, at one point as if it was in the yard. My dad went out with a gun. Not seeing anything, he just fired into the air. The screaming didn't stop. My dad came back in and he said, "Well, I don't guess it is a panther. The gunshot didn't scare it." My brothers, being a lot older than I am, used to go out exploring all the time. One day they were going out. I begged them to let me go, and they did. We came across a small cemetery with about 7 headstones in it. One of them had been turned over. We went over and looked at it. It was a woman's name, which has long since left my mind. They decided that they should stand it back up, so they did. Strange thing, we never heard the screaming again. Next story. Several years after we lived in Wayne, we moved into a house on Childers Road. This house felt strange from the time we moved into it. It began with just hearing what sounded like footsteps in the attic. And then one evening, we were out back. My son looked up at the gable vent. He said, "Look." We looked up, and the vent had been pushed out from the inside. I called the landlord. He came and fixed it the next day, nailed it shut. 2 days later, it was open again. This was an old house. The only way to get into that attic was using a ladder in our son's closet. We called the landlord again. He came over. When he went up into the attic, he said it looked like no one had been up there for years. This time he put boards inside and out to hold the vent in. Less than 24 hours later, it was back out again. This time he just left it out. Now, all along, we had continued to hear footsteps in the attic. Now there was a change. You could hear someone climbing the ladder in the closet. This freaked our son out, and so he started sleeping in our room. It continued to get worse. One day, I was told by a woman to wash the dishes. Thinking it was my wife, I asked her. She was in the front bedroom. Even our son said his mother hadn't said anything to me. We would leave the house with the TV off, just to come back and find it on. We have gone out to sit on the porch, leave the TV on. When we would come back in, it would be off. Lights would go off on us or come on. Dishes would be moved around. The water in the kitchen would come on. Whoever or whatever it was liked everything clean and tidy. My wife later found out that the house had been moved here after a house right across the road burned down. They lost their son in the fire. When the owner moved his house here, he remodeled it. Both he and his wife died here. We just figured that's who our visitors were. They never did anything to us, just let us know they were there. Next story. It was Christmas Eve. My mother was waiting for her brother to arrive, who was going to spend Christmas with us. It was getting late. He was supposed to be taking the bus that ran from Huntington to somewhere above Wayne. It had already passed the house, and he didn't get off when it stopped. Mom was really getting worried. Then all of a sudden we heard someone pounding on the front door and yelling. Dad answered the door. There was my uncle, white as a sheet, out of breath, and sweating like it was the middle of summer. He sat down on the couch to catch his breath. Mom gave him a glass of water to drink as he started to explain. He told us that he had worked all day and was very tired. He fell asleep on the bus. When he awoke, the bus was already in Wayne. He got off there and started hitchhiking back to Lavalette. No one would pick him up, so he had walked all the way to Dixon. It's there that it happened. In Dixon, there is a little family cemetery. A friend of my uncle's had been buried there about 3 days prior to this. My uncle swore that he could hear his voice calling for him. He had run the remaining 3 miles or so to our house, scared senseless. Next story. This story was told to me by my brother, who is a coal miner in a local coal mine. Robbie, my brother, operates a man trip, a sort of miniature train that carries miners and supplies into and out of the coal mine. He stated that he had taken supplies into the face of the mine and was on his way back out to unload the trash and excess from the man trip. Robbie had been lying on the man trip with his eyes closed for several minutes while the machine traveled on the rails back to the surface when he had a strange feeling come over him. He stated that he felt as if someone was reaching out to touch him. Now, cowardice to the unexplained runs in our family. So Robbie quickly opened his eyes to see if he could find anywhere on the man trip to maneuver away from this foreboding feeling. When he saw running or floating beside the machine, a ghostly-looking young girl. According to Robbie, she appeared to be about 6 years old and had long, stringy, dirt-filled hair. Robbie stated that her eyes were empty sockets of blackness. My brother informed me that it appeared as if the wraith was attempting to reach out for the motor of the man trip. The apparition appeared to him for only a few seconds before disappearing. Robbie questioned several of his co-workers, but they all just laughed off the story and informed him that he was crazy. Several weeks went by, and my brother put his sighting into the back of his mind, or at least tried to do so. On his way back into the mine, he was informed that some of his co-workers had been traveling into the mine and that a cable mounted to the roof of the mine had broken, dropping some equipment onto their man trip. This had missed the miners by mere feet. The strange twist to the story is that this accident had taken place at nearly the same location as where my brother had seen his ghostly apparition. Next story. When I was only 8 or 9 years old, my family, mom, dad, and my younger brother and I moved to a new house just down from where we had lived for several years. Upon entering the house for the first time, I can recall a great fear and anxiety about a certain walk-in closet that separated the two bedrooms in the house. After moving in, I would have nightmares of an old, ugly, gray-haired woman with very long fingernails coming out of the closet at me. There were times when I wasn't sure if they were nightmares or actual occurrences. I told my brother about them, and he said he wasn't scared of the closet and had not had any such dreams. When I told my mom, I can recall that she didn't take the news well. She told me not to think about it and it would go away, but it never did. Several years later, when I was in high school and we had long moved from that house, mom told us of an incident that had happened several times in the old house. Monday was wash day at our house, and mom said that she dreaded it with a passion, not just because of the physical work involved, but because of another reason. The way mom had the bathroom set up for wash day was to have the wringer type washing machine poised next to a bathtub full of cold water. When she would run the clothes through the wringer, they would fall into the tub and mom would then bend over and pull them out to dry. Mom said on several different occasions she would be bent over the tub and get a strange feeling that someone was watching her. She would look up and see this old gray-haired woman with long fingernails standing in the doorway to the bathroom, and she would start moving toward mom with an eerie grimace on her face. I was determined to find out if anyone else had experienced these sightings before we moved into the house. I talked to the elderly gentleman who had lived next door to us when we lived in the spooky house. I asked him if he knew who lived in the house before us. I noticed a change in his usual happy-go-lucky attitude. He told me with a rather sad tone of voice that his mother-in-law, an elderly lady with gray hair, had lived there. He said she had been afflicted with mental problems for some time before her death. When I asked her how she had died, he replied, "She hung herself in the walk-in closet between the two bedrooms." Next story. I have lived in this small former mining community for all of my life. At one time, this was actually a very large and very busy little town. There were numerous businesses, a large school, a company store where you could get anything you could imagine, even a movie theater. It is hard to believe that they even found room for all of this in such a small place. But ask anyone who has been here for a while. They did it. Once the mine shut down, many of the residents left to find work elsewhere. With them went the businesses, heritage, and many of the stories that could possibly explain some of the strange things that have happened here. One story in particular that thoroughly freaks me out happens to be one that happened to me. When I was around 3 years old, I can clearly remember this little girl who lived just down the road from me. Her name was Beth. She was very petite, with long, sandy blonde hair and freckles, and close to the same age as me. I remember playing on the swing set in my yard with her and playing with my dolls, but she would never come in my house with me. I don't remember playing with her a lot, but I very clearly remember everything about the last day she came up, just as though it happened yesterday. We were playing in my yard on the swings, just like always. I had just had a birthday, so I had a lot of new toys to play with, and I wanted to show them to my friend. I asked her to come inside to see them, since I wasn't allowed to bring any of them outside. She didn't want to. I begged, but to no avail. Her mother came walking up the road soon after. She was a small-built woman, with her long red hair piled up neatly on her head. She was wearing a mid-calf yellow dress. When she got to the driveway, she started to call to Beth, telling her, "We have to leave. Come on now, it's time to go. Now tell your friend goodbye and get down the road." That was the last I ever heard of Beth or any of her family. I have asked my great-grandmother and my grandfather many times if they remember her, but neither of them even heard of the little girl or her mom. I finally asked my mother, who lives in another state and has for most of my life, if she remembers me talking about Beth when I was a little girl. Her face went pale. She asked, "Are you talking about the little girl with really long hair and freckles?" I was so happy to hear that I wasn't crazy, that I really did have a friend named Beth. Boy, was I wrong. Mom told me that she remembers her because she knew her too and had the same story that I did. Only she played with Beth when she was a little girl too. She did some research, though, to find out just who this elusive little girl was. Apparently Beth lived here long ago with her parents. Her dad was a miner here. Long before my family moved to the community, they all got very sick with some kind of virus that eventually took the lives of the whole family. Perhaps Beth was too young and innocent to realize what happened, so she just wanted a friend to play on the swings with her and found two generations of us. Next story. I had hunted all my life, and I've never heard of anyone say anything about my buddy's farm until one deer season in 1981. We started out one morning going to Little Bull Run in Gilmer County to go hunting. I had a pretty good day until that night. My buddy and I were going to share bed that night because of limited room, so we all decided to go to bed. I lay in bed with my eyes open, not being able to sleep. My buddy had no problem. He was snoring like crazy when I heard something. I don't know what it was, but I sat straight up in bed and looked at the closet and seen two of the biggest red eyes I had ever seen. I was so scared because they were moving. I didn't know what to do, so I started elbowing my buddy and he wouldn't wake up. So I laid back down terrified until finally they were gone. I didn't say anything the next day or since until my buddy told me years later. And he said, "You know, there are things in that hollow that don't belong there." So I said, "Like what?" He said, "I don't know, but whatever it is, it don't belong there." Next story. The story that I'm about to tell is different stories rolled into one, simply because they happened around the same place, but at different times. My cousin, who happens to be my best friend, has encountered and heard of different sightings on and around this old home place. I have seen some things myself. There was one time that I remember his brother-in-law bought an old blazer, and that night Around 1 o'clock, the horn would go off by itself. We were on the phone and he said, Joe, do you hear that? And I said, hear what? He said, that horn. Every night around 1 o'clock it goes off. At first I thought he was just playing around, until he took the phone to the window and let me hear it. His brother-in-law unhooked the horn, and it would still go off. Rumor has it that an old man died in the blazer, and when his brother-in-law found that out, he got rid of it. Here's a story about his uncle's house. People said that one night, a pale, white woman was seen going around his uncle's house. The woman was someone buried in a graveyard. People said that the upstairs light would come on by itself. The stairs would squeak, and you could hear noises around the house. His brother moved a trailer in where the big yard used to be. One night, his brother and sister were moving stuff in when all of a sudden something started pushing them outside. There was no one there but him and her, and whatever it was pushed them out the door. A candle came off the refrigerator and hit the floor. It got so bad that his brother wouldn't stay there and stayed with his mom and dad. He said that place was strange. His sister has seen dead people, headless people, snakes, and I don't know what else. One night she was taking a shower and heard someone walking in the hallway. She thought it was her husband coming home from work. When she stepped out of the bathroom, she saw an old man walking into their daughter's bedroom. When she went into the room, she couldn't find anybody. Even he himself has seen some strange things. His TV would come on by itself and start channel surfing. One day he started out of the bedroom and was going to close the door when the door shut itself. He tried to open it, but it was like it was locked. Then it finally opened. One night, him and I were on the couch watching TV when all at once something loud was running on the porch. It couldn't have been anybody because everyone was in bed asleep. I stayed up all night one night and saw something in the window. I know it couldn't have been human because the window was at least 9 feet off the ground from the outside. He moved the trailer in where the garden used to be, and some strange stuff happened there too. One night him and his wife went to bed. He checked the trailer and made sure the stove was turned off, which it was. The next morning when they got up, the stove was on. Sometimes you could see what looked like an old woman standing in the living room window. My cousin, his sister, dad, brother, and uncle all lived in the same place. They are all right besides each other. The land that they live on has got to be haunted. Next story. This is a story of an old house, a haunted house with a murderous past. I've heard stories by the people who have lived in it. My mother was one. She said that there was an old room that they used for a junk room, and at night it sounded like the old furniture was being slung around in the junk room. You could hear screams and shouting, but every time someone would check it out, they would find the room untouched. A coin would roll down the stairs, and every time you would try to catch it, it would disappear. One night, my aunt woke up to see an old man standing at the head of her bed. There was a door in Mom's room that they always kept locked. Well, one night, Mom was brushing her hair, and the locked door unlocked itself and slowly creaked open. My second cousin tried to live in the old Webb house, and she said the dishes would rattle at night. She was sitting in a recliner watching TV when all of a sudden the recliner reclined back by itself. Sometimes you could see a pair of eyes in the window. You could smell lilac perfume. She would turn the upstairs light off, go to the store, and when she got back, the light would be on. Her husband would lay in bed at night and hear the sound of barrels rolling down the stairs. There have been other people who have tried to live there, and everyone that I know of said it was haunted. Every time somebody moved in, it was not long before they moved out. Even the people who live there now say it's a spooky place to live. If ever there was a haunted house, the old Webb house would be it. Next story. This happened at a Walmart supercenter in Fayetteville, West Virginia, just south of the new River Gorge Bridge. Before I continue, it was said that there was a great deal of protest on building the new store at its current location from the local residents. One of the reasons was because there was supposedly a very old cemetery on the land. Ultimately, Walmart beat out the protest, and the store was built and opened in July of 2006. Now, here comes my story, and I realize it's not that long, but it's true. But let's start with the background. I wouldn't be surprised if more occurrences occur at the store. I was at the store for a few weeks, doing some late-night shopping with my wife. We shopped at the store a few times before, and nothing ever happened. So we were going on about our business as usual. We stopped by the automotive department to check on tire prices when we noticed an older man leaning against a counter in the Tire and Lube Express. It was close to midnight, and the Tire and Lube Express was obviously closed and the lights off. I would guess this man was in his 70s. We went over to check on him and asked if he was all right. No answer at first. I asked him again, and he only replied, "Oh, thank you, I'm fine." He then sat down against the counter on the floor. We reluctantly left him there, and not even 10 seconds later, right around the corner, we ran into an employee and informed him. Together we walked back to the Tire and Lube Express. No old man. Nothing at all. He had completely vanished. Now, you might be thinking he just got up and left when we weren't looking, but I'm doubting it. We walked directly around the corner and into the employee. While our backs were turned away from the Tire and Lube Express, the employee was looking directly at its only exit, and he didn't see anyone leave. So there wasn't anywhere this old man could have gone. I have since spoken to other people around town, and they have told me they have heard of strange things happening when the store was being built. Rather or not, it's true, the store was built on an old cemetery. I don't know, but I'm starting to believe there's something to that story and about the strange occurrences there. Next story. I was a student at Glenville State College from September 1999 through September 2003. Throughout my college career, I heard more than my share of ghost stories about the campus that I lived on, many of which I dismissed as quickly as I heard them. But as a non-ghost believer, I can personally account for more than a dozen unexplained and hair-raising experiences. It must have been around October or November 2002 when my first real unexplained incident happened. It was about 3 p.m. on a Friday afternoon when both of my neighbors at Pickens Hall went home for the weekend, both of whom lived more than an hour from the campus. I spent the rest of the evening playing PlayStation and watching movies until my girlfriend came over to my room to spend the night. We sat up late that night just talking and goofing off until we went to bed about 12:30 a.m. I remember how quiet the dorm was that night. The football team had an away game and almost everybody else had taken off for the weekend. Suddenly, about 12:45 a.m. or so, I heard a loud noise coming from my neighbor's room. It sounded like someone was moving furniture around. This wasn't just a sudden single noise, because if it was, I would have dismissed it as simply something that goes bump in the night. I mean, come on, that dorm is probably 90 years old. You're going to hear noises. But this seemed to go on for about 30 seconds. Then the same noise started coming from my other neighbor's room. I know what you're thinking at this point. Maybe my neighbors both came back the same night, because that's what I would think if I was reading the story. But one of my neighbors lived in Ohio and the other lived in Bridgeport. Trust me, they were not in their rooms. My girlfriend and I both sat up in bed and just looked at each other, and I asked her, "Did you just hear that?" And of course she replied, "Yes, I did." As quickly as the noises started, they stopped, and all was quiet again on the fourth floor of Pickens Hall. I remember laying in bed after that, both of us awake, when suddenly again another noise started in my room about 7 feet from my bed. It was a noise that sounded like someone or something was dropping marbles one at a time on the hard surface of my floor, and as they would hit with that tit-tit-tit noise, they would make your rolling noise and slap to my wall. This happened about 4 times, but we never saw anything in the room. This wasn't as scary as you might think. For years, I've often heard stories of a little boy falling down the steps in the old house that was there before Pickens Hall and breaking his neck some 90 years before. I had also heard rumors that many people living in the dorms have had the same experience. Some even claimed to have seen a little boy in bibs with a sack full of marbles. I didn't see anything like that. But all the same, I figured that if it was a ghost, then it was probably just the little boy, and I was almost certain that he was going to hurt us. The following morning, I went to my neighbor's room, and sure enough, no one was there. My girlfriend and I never told too many people about what happened that night. I guess because we thought nobody would believe us, especially since it never happened again in the months that followed. I suppose that you could probably chalk this experience up to something that's not paranormal. I'm sure if you tried hard enough, you could find a reasonable explanation for what happened. I'm not saying I believe in ghosts, and I'm not saying that I don't believe in ghosts. I believe oftentimes people see and hear what they want to believe. But for me, this was something totally random and out of the blue. To be honest, I'm not sure what to think. Next story. In May 1996, I bought my first house, located at Muddy Creek Mountain. At first, the house seemed inviting and warm to me and my family. Sometime during the fall of 1996, my sister was visiting and telling us stories of domestic violence late one night. During a conversation in which some man had killed his wife and himself in a common murder-suicide scenario, I stopped my sister in mid-sentence and stated, "Say no more. Whatever that is here is becoming upset and giving off bad vibes. I can feel them." From that point on, the house seemed to take on a new character. Strange noises in the night, people walking around at all hours, turning lights on and off, water faucets turning on, and opening doors and slamming doors. Little things would occur like CD cases with no CDs to be found anywhere in the house. VHS boxes laying around empty with the actual VHS tapes disappearing into oblivion. Pop cans disappearing from the refrigerator within 30 minutes. Just plain crazy things going on. One night, I arrived home late with no one there. I got out of the truck to go inside when I got this feeling of awful dread. Looking at the house, I got back in the truck and locked the vehicle doors. I sat there for the longest time trying to think about what to do. I could wait for my wife to arrive and go inside with her, or I could go inside the house against my gut instinct. So I sat staring at the house for something like 45 minutes, thinking that waiting was the best option. Lights were on, burning in the house. The light to the living room went out all of a sudden, but the other lights that were on stayed on. My first thought was that a light bulb had burned out. The utter dread got worse when I got the feeling that whatever it was knew I was concerned and stalling about going inside. Finally, I said, "That's enough," and started the truck and drove back to the highway to wait. I parked and waited by the highway to wait my wife's car. After a while, I saw her car go by, so I followed her home. When we pulled into the driveway, the light in the living room was mysteriously back on. When I told my wife what had transpired that night, she thought I was going crazy. I told her, "No. Whatever is here despises me and would like to see me harmed or destroyed. It hates me because I know it's here." My wife finally believed the house was haunted for real late one night when both her and I saw at the same time a ghost child run past our bedroom door. It frightened her more than me because I knew it was not the evil spirit which was really haunting the place. The house is again for sale to some poor, hapless soul who probably does not know at all what awaits them.